Okay, we've got about 4 weeks between now and Christmas. Four different Sunday nights, maybe five, but at least four different Sunday nights where we can do something and talk about, as I said, traditions. Tradition. Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof. Yeah. Remember his song Traditions, but the one that most people remember is... Yeah. If I were a rich man. Traditions. A couple of folks asked about different traditions and thought we'd start with some Thanksgiving traditions and then move towards Advent and Christmas traditions, including the origin of the Jesse tree and other things, which actually is not a modern day tradition. That one goes back to the Middle Ages. But traditions, in particular Thanksgiving traditions. It's not something that we just have here in this country. A lot of different, other, in ancient times, other folks gave thanks in different ways. Egyptians, Greeks, Romans, to the gods for different things. But we actually have some biblical references and mandates and examples of Thanksgiving festivals. Actually, in the spring, Pentecost, you had the period leading up to Pentecost, but Pentecost, which was 50 days after Passover, was a remembrance of the 40-year wilderness wanderings, as well as the giving of the Ten Commandments, and that 50-day period was a very solemn period of reflection after Passover. But when you got to Pentecost, the actual celebration of Pentecost, it was a spring harvest festival. Pentecost actually celebrated the barley harvest, which was the first harvest. Not the wheat, but the barley. Barley was the grain of the poor, but it ripened first and was harvested first. So you had a festival in the spring, Pentecost, that was a harvest festival and a festival predominantly of Thanksgiving. Passover is a remembrance and a celebration of Thanksgiving, but probably the one that that would most coincide with at least this time of the year is Sukkot. Or the Feast of Booths, which also is tied in part to the wilderness wanderings. You can go online and you can order your own sukkah, which is the little booth, a portable booth that you can set up in a corner of your home. If you were Jewish, a lot of Jewish folks do this, and you're encouraged to eat as many meals as possible during this that week, the Feast of Booths, as a family. In that little hut, reminding you that God provided for you in the wilderness once again. And when you got to this land of promise, you had plenty. You had grain, you had vineyards, you had houses, you had all kinds of things that God provided, which you didn't actually work for. And so the Feast of Booths, or Sukkot, is in the fall, at the fall ingathering of the harvest. In Leviticus chapter 23... starting in verse 33. And the Lord said to Moses, say to the people of Israel, on the 15th day of this seventh month, and for 7 days is the Feast of Booths, or Sukkot, to the Lord. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work. I guess easy work's okay. 7 days you shall present offerings by fire to the Lord. On the 8th day you shall hold a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to the Lord. It is a solemn assembly. You shall do no laborious work. These are the appointed feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim as times of holy convocation, for presenting to the Lord offerings by fire, burnt offerings and cereal offerings, sacrifices and drink offerings, each on its proper day. Besides the Sabbaths of the Lord, and besides your gifts, and besides all your votive offerings, and besides all your free will offerings, which you give to the Lord. On the 15th day of this seventh month, when you have gathered in the produce of the land, you shall keep the feast of the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a solemn rest, and on the 8th day shall be a solemn rest. And you shall take on the first day the fruit of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. You shall keep it as a feast of the Lord 7 days in the year. It is a statute forever throughout your generations. You shall keep it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All that are native in Israel shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the people of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. And so this was a harvest celebration. It's in the fall at the ingathering of the fruits there as well. It is sometimes called the season of rejoicing within Judaism. So there is that biblical reference. Also in 1 Chronicles chapter 16, that starting in verse 7, that on that day David first appointed that thanksgiving be sung to the Lord by Asaph and his brethren. O give thanks to the Lord, call on his name, make known his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him, sing praises to him, tell of all his wonderful works. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord in his strength. Seek his presence continually. Remember the wonderful works that he has done, the wonders he wrought, the judgments he uttered, O offspring of Abraham his servant, sons of Jacob, his chosen ones. Starts out, it's a period of thanksgiving. Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Of course, we go to the Psalms. We can immediately think of the 100th Psalm. Right? Make a joyful noise, Lord, all ye lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come into his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he that has made us, and we are his. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name. For the Lord is good. His steadfast love endures forever, and his faithfulness to all generations. Enter his gates with thanksgiving when we enter there. Not just at Thanksgiving time, but at other times as well. At Pelham Road Baptist Church in their gymnasium, they've got that saying on the wall.
We had to memorize it in fourth grade. Could you imagine that today?
I've asked them why. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. And they said, well, we hope that it'll cut down on people yelling at the officials and other things. I said, oh, they might be thankful for the opportunity to vent. You know, you never can tell. Psalm 57, verses 7 through 10. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my soul. Awake, O harp and lyre. That's L-Y-R-E. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations, for your steadfast love is great to the heavens, the faithfulness to the clouds. So over and over, bless you, over and over and over again, we're called in the biblical text to give thanks to God. And there are specific times of the year where within Judaism they gave thanks to God. The earliest Christians not only celebrated the crucifixion resurrection, not only worshipped on the day after the Sabbath, the first day of the week, but many of those early Jewish Christians continued for a period, not only to meet in the synagogue, but afterwards, but even Paul says that sometimes he and those who were traveling with him, if it were a particular, in particular the Feast of Booths, that fall Thanksgiving, if it's Passover, or if it's Pentecost in particular, Paul would still do those things and celebrate those festivals because he was called to thanksgiving. So the foundation of Judeo-Christian faith involves giving thanks. Giving thanks regularly, but also at special times. We, however, do that for Thursday in November, right? What are some of the Thanksgiving traditions that you remember or that stick out to you as your families?
Detroit and Green Bay.
Yeah, football games.
Football games. Yeah, early on it was Detroit and Green Bay almost every year. The Lions played. Then later on the Lions played other people. But early on for years and years and years it was Detroit and Green Bay. And you ate lunch, but the TV was on. And that was after the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Yeah.
What are others? At one time they played on Thanksgiving?
That was Big Thursday. It was a state fair late October, I think. That might be one of the
things.
We got off in school in Columbia on Big Thursday, and that was when Clemson always came to South Carolina, and they were always visiting, but then Clemson decided, hey, even though we get half the tickets, we're going to split this game.
Right. Okay.
They did play on Thanksgiving, too.
Okay.
They may have sometimes, but Big Thursday was usually the last game. didn't state fair.
Then it went away, and I guess about 3 years ago, they started making it Saturday night Thanksgiving.
Okay. Other Thanksgiving traditions.
Bird season and rabbit season.
Yeah, I remember doing some hunting during the day, and even up until a number of years ago when I finally stopped hunting at my brother's, we'd go up Thanksgiving. The meal was ready at my parents' house about dark, and they knew to expect us to come traipsing in about dark unless we were still hunting for one that had been shot. And then they could go ahead and eat, and we'd eat when we got there. But I remember squirrel hunting or bird hunting at Thanksgiving. We did have turkey, although the pilgrims probably didn't, but we had turkey. Every Thanksgiving, rabbit hunting.
That's first day you use guns, buddy.
Right. Okay. I, of course, you know, the interesting thing here when we talk about Thanksgiving, these first three or four things are all sports. But there's sporting events that pull people together and that kind of thing. Smell everything, cook. What was that?
I said, my family didn't hunt, but we might have killed a hog.
If it's cold enough, that's about the time you started killing hogs. You hunted the one down out there that you were going to kill.
Technically, no, they sent me in the house because if I saw that, I
would eat it. Oh, okay. Any other particular traditions? Count your cows. Did he? I don't guess he fell asleep. You know, if it had been sheep, he would have. No,
he'd get them all burnt up, and he would count yeah. How
many he had. Well, I remember, and I remember not only hunting, but, of course, my granddaddy started taking me hunting when I was 5 years old. So that's been a number of years. But sometimes we'd be at my parents' house. A lot of times we'd be at my grandparents' house. Occasionally we'd go out into the country, southern Alamance County, where my grandfather grew up, and with his brothers and sisters and their families and those kinds of things. But I also, one of the things that I remember, a couple of things I remember about Thanksgiving, it was always cold enough to where my mother or my grandmother would make a coconut cake. They cracked and ground their own coconuts. And my mother make a Rocky Mount cake. And they'd take those things and sit them out on a back porch, and they'd stay cold out there. The other thing I remember is one thing I look forward to with Thanksgiving dinner was that's the first time during the year each year that I got to eat persimmon pudding.
I tell you, I know some traditions like keep going, but the way the weather is nowadays, you forget about that tradition of putting pie on the back porch.
Right, that's true. Persimmon pudding, you get, of course, you don't get them till after, you have to get them after the first frost. My great uncle used to tie his dogs up during the day for a couple of weeks. He'd tie them up every morning. He'd go out early in the morning and spread out sheets under the persimmon trees and wait for them to fall and get them so the dogs didn't get them. But you take the pulp out of them. I've got my grandmother's recipe. You take the pulp out of them and you get all that prepared, and it's got some eggs and some vanilla flavoring and just a little bit of sugar, and you mash all that up and you get it whipped really good, and then you put it in a glass pan like you would brownies. In fact, it almost looks like a brownie, and then cook it. It's so rich, it's not even funny. It just comes up about that thick, and it's brown, but it's just as rich as it can be. Mess up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, all kinds of different traditions that go on. My mother always did the harvest table at the church. She'd spend 4.5 to 5 hours doing it because she'd back off. Nah, that doesn't look right. Nah, it doesn't. Early on, sometimes when we were younger, she'd take us with her. When I got old enough to say no, I had other things to do. I made sure I said no, I had other things to do. That kind of thing.
Well,
specific day by Lincoln, and before that, did it come up about that everyone remembered the Pilgrims from the get-go, or did they retro back 100 or 200 years ago?
Well, interesting that you ask, Ed.
We're going to be here.
The Mayflower left Plymouth, England, 1620. Had 102 passengers and crew. Took them 66 days to get across. They planned on going to the mouth of the Hudson. They landed up near Cape Cod. And later on, a month later, they crossed the Massachusetts Bay and established the Plymouth, Massachusetts. Some of them went ashore and started building things. Most of them stayed on board the ship, which was probably a bad thing to do because they got scurvy and other things, and half of them died by the spring, by the time March came around. And when they finally decided they were going ashore, they were actually met by one of the, they were met by an Indian who talked to them in English. Probably because he learned it.
He was American.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I said. He said how, and I said by speaking English. Yeah. Actually, he had learned from Squanto. Y'all remember all those stories growing up? Maybe we do. Kids don't learn it these days, but about Squanto and the Indians. A few days later, Squanto, who was of the Pawtuxet tribe, showed up, and he began talking to those first Pilgrims in English, and told him he had actually been kidnapped when he was younger by an English sea captain and was sold into slavery, headed back across. And when he got over to England, he escaped into London and eventually worked his way up, learned things, worked his way up, and came back over as part of an exploratory expedition. And then when he got back over here, he cut and run and went back to his tribe. So that's kind of how Squanto got involved in all those kinds of things. They got to talking, and he and members of his tribe taught them how to cultivate corn. Of course, this is in the spring now. Taught them how to cultivate corn, to start maple syrup factories, how to get sap out of maple trees, when to tap them, how to tap them to get the syrup out of them, because they'd run out of sugar and everything else on the ship. Taught them how to catch fish, taught them which plants you eat, which plants you don't, because they'll kill you. And actually, in the Northeast, a lot of hemlock trees. Ask Socrates about that. But which ones were poisonous, and all that kind of stuff. And eventually, they made friends with the not only the Pawtucket Indians, but the Wampanoag tribe up in New England. That was in 1621, the spring. Because they arrived in 1620 in the fall. And most of them died, or half of them died during the winter. That year they planted their own corn crop, and guess what? It made. From the Indians. And the governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony in Massachusetts, the governor, William Bradford, organized a celebration. And actually, it was to be a celebration thanking God for the harvest and thanking God for those Native Americans that had befriended them and helped them. And thanking God that the ones that were still alive were still alive. And they hadn't died along with the others. So initially, it was a Thanksgiving celebration to thank God for all of these things. He had a group of the Native Americans, including the chief of the Wampanoag, Chief Massasoit. It lasted 3 days. So, and they didn't even have football to sit around and watch. They didn't have leftover turkey either. But it lasted 3 days. One of the chroniclers of those early days, Edward Winslow, was appointed by the governor to record things, and he wrote that Bradford sent 4 men on a mission for fowl to shoot birds. The Indians and Native Americans arrived with 5 deer. They all deer. Five deer.
You thought you said beer.
I thought you said beer.
No, five deer.
But I knew better.
You think about barley and corn, and where's your mind go? They also had corn, and they made the bread out of corn. So I guess they had cornbread.
Cornbread, no doubt.
They had cornbread. they had pumpkin and beans. They also, among other things, they had lobster. Clams. Yes. We're talking about up in Massachusetts. They had lobster. They had seal. They had swans, geese, ducks, passenger pigeons, and porridge. And porridge. Those were the things. While there were turkey around, none of the accounts says that they had turkey, but they had plenty of other wild game to eat and other wild birds to eat. Well, you know, Benjamin Franklin, when they were trying to decide on a national bird, Benjamin Franklin suggested the turkey. In 1622, and in 1622 there was a severe drought that almost wiped out all the crops, caused a great deal of hardship. So, and there was not a Thanksgiving celebration that year. In 1623, when the fall harvest came around, the drought had ended, there was food, and so Bradford declared another celebration of thanks. And this time he specified that it was to be a celebration of religious proportions, thanking God for those kinds of things. In the Continental Congress later on, there were different times. Some years they celebrated Thanksgiving, some years not. Different colonies did, others didn't. In fact, it seems that the South didn't come along for a while having those kinds of celebrations, the Southern colonies. Continental Congress designated different days in different years. George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation by the government in 1789. And he said it was to be a time of Thanksgiving, quote, for a happy conclusion to the war and successful ratification of the U.S. Constitution. Adams and Madison also designated days. 1817, New York was the first of the states to adopt an annual Thanksgiving holiday. And that was even before the Macy's Day Parade. Other states north of the Mason-Dixon line did too, but they established it at different times during the year, not all the same day. In 1827, Josepha Hale began a campaign for a national holiday. For 36 years, she tried to get there to be a national holiday. By the way, I didn't know this, but in my research, you probably know something that Josepha Hale wrote. She's famous for. Talks about white fleas. Fleas. Mary's little lamb had fleas as white as snow. No. She actually wrote Mary Had a Little Lamb, among other things. So, that's what I thought when I was a kid. You know, Mary had a little lamb, little lamb, little lamb. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleas were white as snow. Might have eventually. And in 1863, and here's where Ed comes in. No. No wonder he doesn't have much hair left. 1863. Now, in 1863, Abraham Lincoln did respond, and Lincoln set a national holiday in which he asked all Americans to ask God, quote, to commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in this lamentable civil strife, and to heal the wounds of the nation. And he scheduled it for the last Thursday in November. And that's where it was celebrated, last Thursday in November, until 1939. FDR. 1939, FDR moved it to a week earlier. Anybody know why? Middle of the Depression. Why did he move it a week earlier?
Give Mr.
Macy an extra week to sell
some. Before he set the first Black Friday. Now he did move it a week earlier in order to spur retail. He hoped to spur retail sales because of the depression, that people would start buying things. See? That's right. I tell you. Al? That's right, Al. But what I thought was interesting was, but when he did that, what I thought was interesting was that some of the people who made fun of him and didn't like the fact he moved it, instead of calling it Thanksgiving, they called it Franksgiving. You know, for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Franksgiving.
The earliest it can be is the 22nd, the latest is the 28th. So it wasn't saving but 3 days at the most. It came on the 30th, 2 days.
Now, he moved it a week earlier than the 4th, Thursday.
Okay.
40, in 1941, after a lot of complaints, he finally moved it back to the 4th Thursday. Yeah, 2 years later.
So it had come on the 30th.
Now, today, unfortunately for a lot of households, the religious connotation, the religious reasons for Thanksgiving gone away. It centers on cooking and eating too much food and football and whatever else.
Buying
Sony's. Yeah. 90% of Americans eat turkey. I don't know what the other 10% eat. Well, we have ham and turkey. So. Right. Other things. What are some of the other things y'all typically eat? Sarah's already mentioned stuffing.
Tater pie.
Tater salad. Sweet potato and pumpkin pies. Macaroni and cheese. What was?
Pecan
pie. And thank you for saying it that way. The way some people say it, I turn and say, that's what you carry into the woods. Cranberry sauce. I prefer the cranberries. I don't like the jelly cranberry sauce, but a lot of people do. In fact, it's sold more than the regular cranberries. And you know why people like the jelly cranberry sauce better?
Well, I have
to make it. Well, because it is what? The more it sits in the can, the more the pectin and the cranberries get to working.
Ferments.
The sweeter it becomes.
Okay.
Y'all eat red? I mean, y'all eat any regular cranberries? Just dry?
Yeah,
that kind of. No, not dried out, but regular ones. Dried out, they're sweet, but the regular ones a little bit on the sour side, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
What? Well, actually, the three fruit crops that are native. The only three that are native to this country that were commercialized were Concord grapes, cranberries, and I knew the third one. No. Blueberries. Thank you. Blueberries. Right. That's the jellied cranberry. And why cranberries? Cranberries may have been, in some form, may have been even at the first Thanksgiving meal. Actually, the Native Americans, cranberries grow from the polar cap all the way to the tropics. But they like cooler, but they will grow all the way to the tropics. And they were used by the Native Americans for food. Not only eat the cranberries, mash them up, that kind of thing, but they use it to make pemmican, where they'd take dried deer meat and fat tallow and cranberries and mash them all together and let them flatten them out, let them dry. And it would stay a long time.
What's this thing you see on the commercials about cranberry juice and the cranberries in a pond type of water?
The bog? They flood it so that they'll float.
Because
actually, They grow on low vines, but they were used by Native Americans way, way back as well for food, to dye clothes. They'd mash them up and then use them to dye clothing. and they sometimes use them. They have medicinal purposes that they use before. They're full of vitamin C, antioxidants. They didn't know about antioxidants, but they use them for. Well, they used them to treat stomach cramps, to treat fevers. They were used as a laxative, and they thought it would purify the blood. So it was used for a lot of different things, but it was around back then. Actually, cranberries, what you get in a bag, like if you go to the store in the produce department, you get in a bag, that's a dry harvest. It takes longer. It's more expensive to do them that way, as opposed to the wet harvest where they flood the bogs. Cranberries actually grow on vines, low vines. And cranberry vines can live 100 years or more. And what they do as the berries get ripe and get ready to drop, instead of going in and picking them up and then stepping all over them, they flood the bogs. They like sandy, loamy soil. They flood the bogs with water. They float. And then they go in, they stir them around, and then they suck them up with a machine now. But they used to stir them around and shovel them out and that kind of stuff. Different ways like that. And that's what they use to... The wet harvest cranberries are what the jelly cranberries made out of. Now, some of the Native Americans dried them for food. Some of them took the leaves and made tea out of the cranberry leaves. The Inuktitut Indians of eastern Canada, I had to look up how to pronounce that, used the leaves as a substitute for tobacco, so you smoke your cranberry. The Cree boiled them and used them as a dye. The Chippewa used them as bait for snowshoe rabbits. Snowshoe rabbits liked them, so they put it out as bait and then they get the rabbits. The Chippewa and Iroquois used them as blood purifiers, laxatives to treat fevers, stomach cramps, and they were used in pemmican. And pemmican, the cranberries actually putting them, scientists have discovered that if you mash them up and put them in with that fat tallow and that dried meat, and let all that dry out, it actually, something about the cranberries cuts down on the bacteria that would normally cause the meat and the tallow to go bad. And so they could use it for months doing that. I've never eaten pemmican, but see it in the stores now. So a lot of the things that we use, and turkeys became plentiful, or were plentiful, and as not with the pilgrims, but as time went along, there were so many turkeys, started using the turkey around the fall, Thanksgiving time. These days, you can't shoot turkeys except in the spring, but in most places. But they were used in the fall. And then other traditions come around. The unfortunate thing is far too few people these days know anything at all about the beginnings, nor do they know anything about the religious connotations that go with Thanksgiving. I remember... not just at Christmas, but at Thanksgiving when we gathered, there would always be a scripture reading about giving thanks to God, and there would always be a more lengthy blessing than usual before consuming the food, reminding folks. So there are a lot of things that we do, some of which go way back, some of which are more recent. Even the celebration of time, the timing is more recent than others. But we do have a biblical mandate throughout to give thanks to God for the things that God provides for us. And not just at Thanksgiving. It should be a part of each and every day. But especially at this time of Thanksgiving where everything is being harvested and all the different. The other thing I look forward to at Thanksgiving was something I didn't get much of the rest of the year, and that was stewed squash. Yeah, you boil that squash and then you squash it. I thought the reason it's called, I really did. I thought the reason it was called squash is because you squashed it up in the container and cooked it with butter and salt. Yeah.
I have my fries.
Yeah. Do it. Yeah. Any other particular Thanksgiving traditions that are important to you all?
Firecrackers. That's when we started out with them. I remember. Firecrackers. We started shooting firecrackers. But 20 minutes.
Halloween.
Yeah,
would be the family.
Yeah. Family gathering.
Yeah.
Well, in our house, we go around, we have a sort of a circle. Each one tells what they're most thankful
for the past year. Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to do that some, and then it got to where everybody, you know, the kids started repeating the people before them, and so they had to say, "Nah, it has to be something," and nobody else says. So then you want to be the first one to go.
Get it over with. Or somebody steals yours. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You have to come
to
something else.
Anything else? Well, we're 1 minute early, so you can be thankful for that. next Sunday night we'll start looking at some Advent and Christmas traditions. 7 Sundays until Christmas. It is on a Sunday. The staircase tables inside, I was asked when Mary got home from work Friday afternoon, because I'd been there since about 2 o'clock, she said, "I thought the lighted deer would be outside."
Yeah, I heard a debate on radio last week.
That's what you're talking about, a Thanksgiving tradition. That's when we used to get our Christmas tree when we'd go hunting on Thanksgiving.
Down there and be home?
Yeah.
You mean our
Jim?
First?
Our first. I heard a debate on the radio last week. More and more people use artificial trees nowadays. First day of November is about when they start putting up Christmas decorations. Now, earlier and earlier, you know.
Yeah. You know, it starts with.
But yes, there are Christmas decorations up already in our house. Okay. And yeah, y'all have Christmas cactuses? Anybody ever have a Christmas cactus? I mean, we've got 3 that we've had forever and ever. The first year we had them is the only year they ever bloomed at Christmas. Generally, they bloom at Easter and Thanksgiving. In fact, I watered one today and it's loaded down with blooms coming up on Thanksgiving. They don't bloom at Christmas. They bloom at Easter and Thanksgiving in our house. Well, thank you all. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.